Support for GLT comes from Bloomington Public Library, now offering a local podcast, Shelf Understanding. Past topics include the tiny house movement, virtual reality, an interview with author Eric Larson, and more. Shelf Understanding is available at bloomingtonlibrary.org, through iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Looking to add more beautiful things to your yard without having to water them? Well, consider rocks. I'm Laura Kennedy, and this is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice from our expert in the field. From the Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences and curator of the Fell Arboretum, it's Patrick Murphy. Hello, Murph.
Hello, Laura.
Today on GLT's Grow, we're talking about using rocks in the landscape. And I like this because we had actually a big, beautiful rock when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. It was dug up out of the house that was built next door, and it was down deep in the earth, and we brought it out. It was beautiful right in the front garden. It's just so beautiful.
Could you sit on it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Perfect, perfect. Rocks, stones, boulders, cobble, gravel. All of those things, they have a place in our landscape. Mm-hmm. And there's actually some historical significance to all of it.
What's that?
The Japanese garden arts are the root for a lot of things that we see in the Western landscape. And rocks and boulders are definitely one of those features. Similarly, gravel ground cover, which is a very Western thing, its origins are also found in Japanese and Chinese gardening. Courtyard-style gardens, miniaturized gardens, and things like that. But you can be a lover of rocks, and it can show up in your landscaping. You know, you don't have to be a geographer or a geologist for this to happen, because you can see these homes whenever you take a drive. And I think it's interesting to see how lots of people manipulate the landscape. And I also find it interesting and humorous how people use the stones in the landscape.
Humorous?
Humorous.
Okay, tell me about
that. The ones that I find to be humorous or entertaining are the ones that appear to have fallen from the heavens. And they just resting on the ground.
Like it's a meteorite or something.
Right, they're just resting on the ground, and it's just, you can see the edges of the boulder where it meets the ground. It's clearly just been deposited there. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen very often, because most times in nature, stones are exposed by time and gravity, water, and even wind can have an impact on the shape and the disposition of the stone. So I also think of the landscaping stuff a lot because it's my vocation. But I can tell you that the rocks and stones and cobble and boulder, they have a very useful part in having a sustainable, long-lasting landscape. So we've talked about placing ornamentals in the landscape before, ornamental trees and showy specimen plants, and oftentimes they're placed in an area where it's the highlight or the focal point.
Right.
But they're oftentimes also placed in areas where they want to change people's direction of travel. So at the bend in a walk, it's oftentimes very nice to incorporate a planting there, because it gives reason to the walkway turning, because there's something there.
All right.
So if you have a situation where it's too shady or too exposed or too something, too much of something, and you're having trouble with a plant in this important spot, large stones and cobble and outcropping, they have a place there, because you don't have to water them. They never change. They don't leave unless somebody's up to no good, you know? And you can select them with a degrees of fashionability so they match, so they look like they didn't just fall from the heavens.
You're listening to GLT's Grow, our weekly gardening show for those who like to get their hands dirty. This week, rocks in the landscape. And I love the idea of sort of coordinating my rocks.
So along those lines, Laura, another really common Western technique is to use decorative stone or gravel to cover the ground. That's not new, but how it's done here in the West is a little bit different. You can oftentimes see this done where you have the arcs and tangents of the landscape with some kind of edge, aluminum, brick edging, stone edging, and then the colored rock on the ground. When you select this colored rock, you want to find some harmony. You want to avoid contrivances. You want to avoid just purple rock in front of the yellow house. Unless you're an LSU Tigers fan, it's going to be really hard to justify how you came up with that.
Okay.
So what is
a good idea?
Look for elements in your home that exist already, or elements that exist on the site or in your region. So here in the Midwest, we have lots of stone that's been deposited by the retreating and advancing glaciers. This is a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Right? A few years.
But there's some predictability. We get this kind of river rock blended mix of pinks and grays and tans, and there's even some reds and greens in there. And that's what everything's made out of around here. Well, if you live out in, say, Lake Tahoe, a lot of the stone out there is kind of a smoky gray color. So that's what you would expect to see in front of a home, was those stones that exist in the in nature there. And in that case, they're harmonious because lots of homes in Lake Tahoe and Reno, they're naturalized homes. They're log homes. They have those earthen tones.
Wow.
Here in the Midwest and all over America, you have those kind of homes, but you also have, like my house. My house is painted blue. So in my case, I have blue rock. So it's like a reflection of what I have in the walls of my house.
Interesting.
You can also use that rock to recreate natural vistas or natural vignettes. So I could have also chosen the natural blend river stones or lots of different blends that have all those kind of earthen colors mixed in there. And it would have appeared to be a natural feature. And you could even make it decorate it with other large stones in the placement of your plants so it looks like it's a dry riverbed. So,
oh, yeah.
So it has some reason.
Like out at Ewing Cultural Center, and they've got the Japanese garden, and there's a dry little dry bed in there too.
That's right. And that's a great example because it has the blue La Paz River stones, which are blue for a reason because that dry riverbed, it looks like water.
Yeah.
Right? So there's some real easy translations there. So that's kind of the lowdown on the smallest rocks. Technical detail, heavy fabrics and plastics are best underneath these rocks.
Okay.
Lightweight tipar and lightweight fabrics are not as effective because the weight of the stone and the heaving and thawing of the ground will eventually push that lightweight fabric into the earth, and you have no barrier between the ground and your stones. This is to prevent that stone ground cover from turning into a weed farm, okay? So that's one little detail.
Yeah, we don't want weeds. We want beautiful rocks.
But I love talking about the big rocks, the big outcropping stones, the big boulders like you had at the home you grew up in. And again, we're going to borrow from the Japanese and Chinese gardening arts and understanding that there are three common shapes that we find the stones in nature.
Right.
And also in how we can incorporate them back into our landscape. It's the ox, which is a low, flat shape, like an ox sitting on the ground. There's the mud man, which is like a man in the squatted or kneeling position.
Right.
It's fishing off of a bank. And the tower, the tall, skinny, just like it sounds, like a tower. These are the shapes of stones that you commonly see. And if you arrange them with that placement in mind and then add this to it, arrange them in triangular arrangements, three-pointed arrangements. Can be a right angle, can be scalene, it can be obtuse, it doesn't matter. That oddness, that pairing of odd numbers makes those stones look like they belong there. And if they're not all exactly the same, you got the low flat one, you got the hunched over fella, you got the tower, where's the tower? Well, maybe that's up by the front door to draw people's attention to something important. So that's one way that you can incorporate all your stones into your landscape.
Okay, Murph, some great advice there. So if you want to add a little rock to your landscape, that will be absolutely gorgeous. And as I said, you don't have to water it. Now, next week on GLT's Grow, we're coming up on the season when we're going to be doing some transplanting of trees and shrubs. So we're going to get a 101 from Murph on that next week. If you've got a question or problem you'd like Murph to tackle gardening-wise, go to our website, submit it there. And that address is wglt.org/grow.